Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Well, the MSCI gauge of global stock markets gained modestly today to reach six-week highs, and we saw benchmark government bond yields rising from multi-year lows as investors awaited a decision on monetary policy from the Fed later. Investors are hoping that the Fed is going to soon cut rates, and that was further fed yesterday when we saw the likes of Mario Draghi and his ECB hinting at economic stimulus comments that have driven up stocks and weakened yields over the last few days. Wayne McCurry, portfolio manager at F&B Wealth and Investments, and Simon Brown of JustOneLap.com have your view from the markets. Evening, chaps. Wayne, kick us off. Episode 4 of FOMC season 2019 is tonight at 8, and it does look like the Fed is backed into something of a corner. What do you expect the Fed to do?
Well, look, they are going to cut rates. It's just a question of, is it tonight or is it at the next meeting? But if they don't cut tonight, they're going to make many rate-cutting noises. So in other words, a rate cut is coming. And just as a bit of an aside comment, they're not cutting it because President Trump says they must cut. They're cutting it for valid economic reasons. The growth rate is slowing down. There's no inflationary pressures, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's the big talking point, Simon, is the pressure that President Trump is piling on Jerome Powell at the moment. He really has been relentless. He's been excoriating the Fed, and he's demanded that it reverses rate hikes made last year. And we saw, when asked by reporters outside the White House yesterday if he wanted to demote Powell, Trump said, let's just see what he does. That certainly seems like more drama to me. What do you expect the Fed to do?
Evening, Michael. I think Jerome Powell would like to not cut rates merely just to show his independence, but I think he's bigger than that, and I think he will do the right decision. I agree with Wayne. I think he's not going to do it tonight, but I think he's going to pretty much lay it on the table and say, we will do it sort of towards the rest of the year. There's still 6 months in 2019, and I think they'll push it down the road, but with as much level of certainty in terms of saying, not today, but definitely in the next 2, 3, 6 months, whatever the case may be, give a very, very clear signal there. And then, of course, data might change over the next few months to not necessitate it. But my sense is not tonight, but at least one, maybe even two, between now and the end of the year.
And we might see a few from our own Saab following the cooing sound of doves over the weekend led by Lesetha Funyagwa. Wayne, from a market perspective today, it was a quietish start from 9 to 11, call it midday. Around midday, we started trending downwards gradually, and I think we ended the day in the red. What was that catalyst to swing the sentiment from around midday?
I don't know actually what went wrong, because there was no particular news that came out. But, you know, the market's 58,500. It's near its sort of record highs. It's almost where it was. It's almost where it was before all the Reserve Bank talk started and all of the bad GDP numbers. So when you look at it now on a year-to-date basis, it's up 10, 12%, something like that. It's basically back at record highs. So, yeah, a little bit of weakness on the day I don't think is massively untoward, to be honest. You know, because it dipped down, it dipped down in sort of June, beginning of June, on the back of trade wars picking up and Donald Trump and tweets and Reserve Bank and bad GDP numbers. But it's forgotten about that now, and it's back up, as I said, at record highs. And the little bit of weakness this afternoon, quite frankly, I think it's just, it's nothing to explain this particularly.
There didn't seem to be a particular catalyst, Simon. If you look at themes today, the major moves up, we had Disc came up 4.5%, Aspen 4%, followed by Fortress, Truist, Mediclinic. That's your top five. On the downside, we had the likes of RCL, Vukile, EPP, Implats, and Roynet. So there don't seem to be too many, shall we call them, thematic drivers behind the big movers today.
I think you're right. I mean, some of the beaten downs, you mentioned Aspen having a bit of a better day. Stanoff, the big loser, we can touch on their results in a moment. To me, the big trend is, I mean, as Wayne says, is, you know, we've actually been having a nice trending year until the end of April, and then we had that massive sell-off sort of towards the end of May, we've recovered it, and we're not going to do straight line moves in any sense. Nothing goes in one direction. It's sort of nice and simply, none of us would have anything to do. But certainly we've seen a market which is happy to bid it higher. We've seen similar happening in the S&P. What I do note with today, volumes are picking up a bit. We saw 24 billion go through the JSE today. And you know, 24 billion is not the biggest number in the world, but for a long time last year, we were struggling at closer to sort of 15 or 16 billion. So there's some sort of confidence coming back, and a lot of buying of the banks again today, with British American Tobacco under pressure. And that stock's been having a tough time of it the last couple of years, in fact.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how South African Inc., so-called South African Inc. focused stocks are bid over the next trading session tomorrow into that State of the Nation address. Mm-hmm. We're going to be touching on that on the panel a little bit later, and what room the President actually has, realistically speaking, to signal to the market that now that the election is behind him, he's willing to take the bold decisions on reforms. Wayne, the big talking point today was the same old names on those parliamentary chair lists, the likes of Mofabedi Zwane, Faith Mutambi, Tina Jonas-Peterson. I thought we were done with them.
Yeah, I also thought so, but clearly that this is part of the compromise. You are now no longer a deputy minister or minister. You are now a parliamentary chairperson. And just looking at it, and these aren't my comments, it's from a very well-known political commentator, that it seems to be 10 definitive Zuma supporters, 8 lukewarm Zuma supporters, and about 11 Cyril Ramaphosa supporters, and then a few undecideds in these parliamentary committee chairs. But understand, this is not a policy decision-making body, number one. And number two, in my view, the big perpetrators of state capture will be executed over the next year or three. And if any of the people, as per all of the rumors, if any of these ex-ministers, as per the rumors, because there's nothing decided in a court of law yet, but if any of the ministers are implicated in state capture, they will be caught up in that net of prosecutions. And then quite clearly, if at some stage they are found guilty of any transgression, they will no longer be the chairman of that committee, or in fact even the parliament.
But that is the long game.
Yeah, and maybe that's exactly what you said. Maybe that's the long game, because understand, the parliamentary chair has got some influence on censuring government. In other words, but it's not policy making. Even the deputy ministers. You know, deputy ministers are a funny thing. They actually do nothing. They're not even in cabinet. Even though you're the deputy minister, you're not actually at cabinet meetings. Did you know that? You don't go to a cabinet meeting. So you're like a PA to the director general.
It's almost like, I don't know, opening the batting for the Proteas at the moment. Not really all that relevant. So I look at the score, 40-1, doesn't look too good at this stage in a must-win game. Simon, talk to me about Steinhoff. Let's talk about the more sordid affairs in South Africa at the moment. Steinhoff never far away from it. It came out as results late in the day yesterday, saying, almost trumpeting the fact that it's narrowed its loss to a quarter of what its prior year's loss was, but it's still riddled with all kinds of uncertainty and legal claims that make this one difficult to touch.
It makes it impossible to touch, Michael. I mean, and one of the things I'd kind of hoped we would start seeing in Steinhoff results was perhaps a little less complexity, perhaps a little easier to read it, you know, particularly for us who aren't, you know, like high qualified chartered accountants and the like. And it isn't getting a lot easier, but certainly they pulled back on some of the losses. Things are looking better in some of the areas. But the bigger picture of Steinhoff really is less about, you know, how well it is or isn't doing, but it's about the lawsuits that are coming. And truthfully, if they manage to turn this around and get it into a profitable company, and my expectation is that in time that they will be able to, frankly, all they're doing is they're creating assets for the legal process which is going to follow, which is it starts at Christo Wiese and his, well, I think it's 59 billion shareholders claims against them, and so the list goes on, Techie Town and others. So the results do show an improvement, a significant one, still significantly loss-making, which is the real one, but it's still a stock that, to my mind, is just very much best left alone. I mean, closing today down at, 1.37 rand, trading pretty much at I don't know, all-time lows, 20-year lows. This is a gambler stock. And, you know, if you want to gamble, my advice is head to the casino because at least the drinks are free.
Well, we have to head to the traffic desk to find out what's happening on the road. With Kitlaro Makasi driving on our roads can be something of a gamble as well.
Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Welcome back with your view from the market of Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at F&B Wealth and Investments, and Simon Brown of JustOneLap.com. Wayne, that CPI number, a slight miss, market expecting 4.4%. We saw headline CPI coming in at 4.5%, but still really anchored in that that midway between 3 and 6. Do you think this will have any bearing on the Saab's decision, which now seems to be very much in favour of a cut at the next meeting?
Cut, in fact, I put a virtual, to be honest, 100% certainty on they're going to cut at the next meeting. And it's interesting, the Reserve Bank now for a while has not been talking 3 to 6% as a range. They've been talking 4.5%. And they've been able to achieve it, and I think they will continue to achieve it for a while still, whether a while or not, because there's no domestic demand. So unless something really bad goes wrong somewhere, they'll probably be able to keep it at that, even if they do cut interest rates. But it's interesting, with inflation at 4.5% and expected growth this year of, say, 0.6%, that gives nominal GDP at 5.1%. The tax authorities have estimated nominal GDP at significantly higher than that. So in other words, the deficit's going to be astronomical this year on the tax side without even any additional Eskom support. So you could get a 5.5% to 6% fiscal deficit. And I might be wrong, but I think the budget's 4.5%, eh? So you're looking at a cliff there.
Yeah, a proper fiscal cliff. And Simon, talking about the State of the Nation address and our fiscal situation as a country, I mean, it's perilous, we know it is. But the big talking point in Sanaa is going to be the level of detail which will be revealed about Eskom and how the government is going to bail it out. I'm hearing debt to equity swaps. The question just might be, which debt holders?
Yeah, and at the end of the day, Michael, I mean, this is ultimately the South African government, and whether it's the debt is on their balance sheet or Eskom's balance sheet is neither here nor there. It may be something, and I can't help wonder if perhaps the PIC doesn't come into the party in this. Obviously, a large holder of Eskom debt, and the government's been talking prescribed assets, and maybe the angle for the prescribed assets is perhaps a little bit more to the PIC. Now, short answer, is this a great solution for us as a country? No, it's not. But we're between a rock and a rock. I mean, we can't kid ourselves. We need Eskom. We need a solution here. And the PIC, in a sense, is a slightly elegant solution because it gets it off the balance sheet of Eskom, but it keeps it to the liability of taxpayers. And ultimately, whether it's fair or not, and it's not fair, but ultimately we're going to pay to get Eskom back on the road, back going again, to get their debt burden down, to get their power stations working as they should be. And if PRC, as a defined benefit, if it's not a great investment for them and they start to run out in 10 years' time and they struggle with defined benefit, we as taxpayers be liable for it. So it's almost perhaps an elegant way to kind of kick that can down the road, because you know, Eskom has to be fixed, and ultimately taxpayers, we're going to pay for it regardless of whose responsibility it is.
Yeah, and the bottom line is that operationally then, once you've bought yourself time, be it 5 years or 10 years, operationally it must be sold. It must be broken up into those component parts, significant private investors bought on board, and operationally pulled out of the death smile that it's been in and stuck in, along with many utilities all over the world with that old model for some time now. Wayne, I want to talk about the NASPAS unbundling tax implication.
Yes.
And I know many listeners are looking at this saying, oh, it's one of my biggest holdings. I want to know what's going on, but I'm not a tax fiduciary. Can you explain in layman terms what's happening to NASPAS?
Okay, look, I'm also will straight up say I am not a tax expert at all, but as far as I understand it, you are NASPAS shareholder. When they're listed in Amsterdam, you are going to get Amsterdam listed shares. They will have a secondary listing in Johannesburg, JSE, so you can trade it here, but from a tax viewpoint, you are going to be taxed on that in capital gains. It's going to be classified as a capital gains event, so you are going to tax on it. I'm just not 100% sure what cost base you can use. I just don't know enough about that, whether it's a zero cost base or whether it'll be some apportionment of the cost that you bought your NASPAS shares at, but I just don't know the answer to that. It will be a capital gains tax event unless you elect to essentially swap those shares back for NASPAS shares, then it won't be a capital gains tax. And the difference between the two is takealot.com and Media24, which are very small, but there will more than likely be some sort of discount between the NASPAS share price and the Amsterdam share price, because the Amsterdam share price is where all of these is sitting. So there's always a holding company discount. You can look at the discount between NASPAS and Tencent, but it won't be anything close to that magnitude, but there will be a discount. So you might be slightly worse off if you want to evade the tax.
So really, as a shareholder, that's my big decision. If I'm holding the NASPAS shares, I've got a choice to make. I can either accept ordinary NASPAS shares like the ones I've got now, but they'll be without the non-South African assets, or I can elect to have the NewCo shares, and that's the company which will own NASPAS's non-South African operations. Or you could do nothing, I guess, and then you'll receive NewCo shares in any event. And I think the NewCos do trigger a significantly bigger CGT event or immediate CGT event in any event. So that's it. I think my advice would certainly be, if you're an investor, go and chat to your tax advisor. This is what fiduciaries really love doing, is figuring and demystifying these sorts of issues and equations out. Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at F&B Wealth and Investments, and Simon Brown of JustOneMap.com. It's your view from the market.